Welcome in to the Late Night Gamecock Show. I am your host, Matt Anderson, as always. And joining me, as always, is Alex Jones at thebigspur.com. Alex, how's it hanging?
We're here. It's one week into the portal. It feels like it's been open for a month and got one more week to go, but it's been a pretty busy time around here.
Yeah, it's what, January 11th, 2026. So the portal is open for players to continue to go in for another 5 days, I guess, Alex, or 4 days, 12, 13, 14, 15. Yeah,
yeah,
so five, 6 days.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I really don't see a lot of current Gamecock players that have not entered the transfer portal making their way to it, but you never know. There have been some players like Jaylen Brown we weren't expecting. But don't worry, Alex and I will touch on a ton of portal stuff. I know Alex has done his homework. He's been all over it for thebigspur.com, like I said. And then, but first, we're going to talk basketball. Men's and women's each had two games each. Then after some basketball talk, we'll get into NIL portal talk. NIL portal talk. And then we'll get into rambling and gambling with Justin Lyles of sportscapvalue.com. But before we get there, Alex, have you been watching any of these NFL playoff games?
They've been awesome so far. I thought the playoffs, like, I'm a casual NFL fan. Like, don't really have a team, kind of just watch just to watch. But these playoff games so far have been really good. And then this Eagles 49ers game, too, has been good so far.
Yeah, it's really fun because I feel like we had so many duds in the start of the college football playoff. You know, some blowouts, some rematches when you think about Ole Miss and Tulane. And then who was the other? Was it James Madison that got in?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, so then James Madison against Oregon, which just wasn't a contest. But, yeah, these NFL playoffs have been great. I hope you've all been watching. I think every game's come down to the wire.
I think what's been cool about the NFL playoffs, too, is that you got teams like the Bears, Jaguars, Panthers who – aren't your – it just feels like there's a whole bunch more new teams this year other than just being a Chiefs-Eagles types of thing.
Yeah, honestly, I have a buddy who's a huge Jags fan, and I wanted to get on the Jags bandwagon, but it's weird for me. I still want to see Josh Allen get a Super Bowl ring. But outside of that, I really am all for the underdogs. Alex, I know we'll probably talk about this with Justin a little bit later, but holy crap, is Indiana the best football team in the country?
It doesn't even feel close either. Like, they just operate at a high level and they're well coached. And I mean, I will get into about this Miami Indiana game, but I mean, it seems like there's a pretty. I'm interested to see what the betting line's going to kind of end up as we get closer to that game because it's clear who it should be favored.
Yeah, it sure is, and we'll have Justin on to talk about that and probably some more college football playoff fallout as well. We want to know how Justin's doing with his gambling because he is pretty daggum good. But, Alex, we need to go ahead and get to the show. So, everyone, get ready. The Late Night Gamecock Show is coming right at you.
Gonna turn on the late night show. Hear what's going down in Cooler Town.
So welcome back into the show again. My name is Matt Anderson, and joining me is Alex Jones of thebigspur.com. Alex, I am a little disappointed right now, if you can't tell. And that's because this women's basketball team was set to have a number two versus number three battle in Colonial Life Arena on Thursday night. And I don't know if you caught the score, but LSU sniped them today.
Yeah, I didn't see that one coming either, just with the way LSU's been playing here these first two conference games. I mean, going 0-2 in the league, I kind of thought Texas had that one, but it makes the standings kind of interesting here early on.
It does. And I think that in women's college basketball, like we've talked about, I think that parity is becoming more and more frequent. I don't think you're going to see any more Tennessee runs, UConn runs. I mean, heck, South Carolina is still in the midst of one. But I think that you're going to see more of the traditionally great teams, and I include South Carolina in that, make it to the Final Four. But I think it'll probably be anyone's game once you get there. Maybe some Elite Eight exits because the game, it's just improved so much on the women's side.
Yeah, I think so. And you're starting to see, you know, especially in the SEC, I think it's starting to get a little bit better too. You kind of have, obviously, South Carolina's been there, Texas been there, LSU's been there. But now you're seeing a Kentucky kind of come up into the top 10, and you knew they were there in Kentucky.
Vanderbilt.
You've seen Vanderbilt, make some noise too. So it's going to be a really interesting SEC slate, I think.
I think it was good for the girls. They went on the road and demolished Alabama. Then today they played Georgia. They were able to do what the boys weren't able to do. But they had, I think it was a 30-14 point halftime lead. They just really stifled Georgia the entire first half. And then I think the final was 65-43. Or 63-45, something like that. So Georgia did score some points in the second half. And sometimes when you have a big lead and you kind of know you can stomp on a team's throat and you have a big game coming up, it's maybe get out healthy, all of that. But it was good for the Gamecocks to get Tania Latson back in the lineup. She had not played since the calendar turned to 2026. And I thought she looked pretty good, Alex.
Yeah, I thought so too. And just, you know, from a team perspective, kind of, you know, looking at the box score, it wasn't the best day shooting from three. You're two or 17 from three, but you really just controlled the paint in this game. I mean, South kind of out-rebounded Georgia 52-37 in this one. It's just, you know, shot 38% from the field compared to Georgia's 27% from the field. And just one of those where when the threes aren't falling, South Carolina's just going to be way just much better than these teams in the paint with Joyce Edwards and Ocon and players like that.
Yeah, and I mean, it sets up for Thursday night. I'm excited for Thursday night. I actually was scouring the internet today, and I just, full disclosure, I went to SeatGeek.com to just look at tickets. I think you can still get in the door right now with $40 per ticket for that game. But in the lower level, man, there's a lot of tickets that are going for $170, $150, $140. So it will still be a very, very hot ticket, and the Gamecocks will be looking for revenge on Texas in that odd non-conference conference opponent tournament that they did, where they made a lot of money out there too.
Yeah.
It's a good thing. But yeah, I'm excited for Thursday. And then to Talaga's point, the SEC is so good this year that you're going to see a run here of some pretty good games.
Got some breaking transfer portal news. Penn State running back Jabri Coleman just committed to South Carolina.
All right. Well, we'll talk about him here a little bit later as well, because I think that brings the running back room back up to five, assuming that no other moves there. But yeah, that's good news. And a kid that played for Stan Drayton at Penn State. Stan Drayton knows about him, knows him. I think what he has, what, 4 years left, Alex?
Coleman.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he redshirted this year. Yep.
Yeah, so you get a little younger there as well. But yeah, the women's games, you're looking at those games coming up, and I'm planning to go to a couple of them myself. And I wish I'd take advantage of some season tickets, because sometimes the season ticket package would be a little bit better than what you're paying on SeatGeek for these women's games. But I expect them to continue to roll. Like I said earlier, nice to get Latson some burn. I don't think the French girl is going to play against Texas. I think she's probably two or three games out, still getting acclimated to not only her team, but America in general, which is always interesting for these kids that come over from overseas. Alex, you know, as we turn our attention to the men's side, I think, you know, we do this show once a week now, Alex. So it's not like we're going twice a week. It's not like we're going every day. So I do think it's important for us to go back to the LSU game. And remember, we're going to be recapping the week. So some games we'll spend some extra time on them if we saw some valuable nuggets there. But when you think about the LSU, there goes Alex. Looks like Alex had to pop out. I got a private chat in here. He's got to post an article about that breaking commitment. But that LSU game kind of surprised me. I said with JB on, I guess it was Thursday, Friday maybe, that I did not expect the Gamecocks to win that game. I didn't think they were going to be able to slow LSU down. But one of the things they were able to do was get contained, collapse on driving players, and instead of players dropping down bounce passes for layups for their bigs, they were kicking back out of the three-point line. And LSU and Georgia, for that matter, are not great three-point shooting teams. So if you're able to do that consistently on defense, especially against these teams that aren't known for three-point shooting, you're going to have the opportunity for some wins. Now, did I expect South Carolina to start the game, what was it, 11 for 12 with a couple threes and be up basically 14 to 2 or something like that within the first 2 minutes of the game? I didn't. But at the same time, the Gamecocks were able to get that lead up to 28 points. And one of the things that I think is valuable is we go back to earlier in the season and against the non-con specifically, while the Gamecocks were dropping games to good teams, you know, not by like 20, 30 points, but like good teams that are quad two caliber teams, they were still at different points of every game of the non-con, getting up by 20, 30, 35 points. So it was good to see the Gamecocks do that against LSU and show they can do that against an SEC opponent who I think is pretty decent. I do think LSU is pretty good despite dropping. I guess they've lost one in a row. I can't remember now. Two in a row because they lost to Vanderbilt on Saturday. But to see the Gamecocks shoot like that, I saw a question in here from Hane. He basically asked, you know, Matt, is this team going to live or die by the three? I think that you saw that this past weekend against Georgia. I thought that all of the things that South Carolina did well against LSU, a lot of those things went away against Georgia, and specifically defensively. Georgia was basically able to get into the paint at will. I thought that Georgia missed a lot of shots that maybe they normally wouldn't make, but I also thought the Gamecock defense was very active in forcing turnovers. And the Gamecocks were able to get out in transition. And if you remember, the Gamecocks were down 9-2, 9-4 in that Georgia game. At one point, they were on a 26-12 run, and they eventually got the lead up to 10 or 11 points. When they started to settle again, when maybe they weren't able to get those stops against the Georgia offense, when that press started bothering them a little bit later in the game, and they weren't able just to kick it up court and shoot an easy three, which they did to break the press a couple times and made Georgia step out of it. But if the Gamecocks are going to shoot the way they shot against Georgia, that's going to be really hard, because almost every other facet of the game, however you want to say it, against Georgia, outside of rebounding and block shots, and maybe they probably lost the turnover battle when it was all said and done. Gamecocks played really well, got up to a 10-point lead, and if a couple more of those threes had dropped, maybe you're talking about that LSU first half again, and it's just too much for Georgia to overcome. So a little bit bothered by the three-point shooting. At one point, Michi was 0 for 7 from 3, and I think Elijah Strong was 0 for 2. So those two specifically, if they're not able to knock down the three, and then Grant Polk, I think, was still not playing this past weekend as well. He's kind of your dead-eye shooter. You're going to have to find ways to get that three-point ball to drop if you're going to shoot as many as you are. I think the Gamecocks should shoot less threes personally. I think that they should start working inside out to get the three-point shots, because you eventually see is stagnation on offense, and it's happening more and more frequently when the Gamecocks start losing.
You saw that in the last 5 minutes of the game when they just kind of got content with shooting threes when – you know, when they weren't having to break the press during, you know, early parts of the game, they were driving the lane, getting kicked out, things like that, to playing inside out. They were opening up three-point shots, and that just wasn't happening there late in that game. And, you know, I was kind of worried going into that game about Santo Cyro, that guy. I mean, he can do it on both
ends. He's really good.
Yeah, he's a real rim protector, but then can do a lot of good things in the paint. But South Carolina did okay there for the most part. But then, you know, Elijah Strong got in some early foul trouble, kind of hurt them a little bit. But then just – you know, you had that game. South Carolina had that game with about 5 minutes left to go, and then just kind of just quit driving the lane and things like that, and just got content with shooting threes, and when the threes at that point weren't falling.
And I think back on the game, and one of the things that helped South Carolina get up to a 10-11-point lead was Georgia got in foul trouble early, and the Gamecocks got to the 1-1 in the first half pretty early. In the second half, it was like the whistle just flipped. There were a lot of fouls called on South Carolina, some ticky-tack ones. You know, Alex, I didn't see the Knox flagrant. They never showed anything on the big screen while I was at the game. Did he pretty much deserve that one?
Probably by the letter of the law, yeah. But it's just one of those where he's getting screened and he's trying – he didn't see him coming. One of those types of things where it's probably one of those rules that needs to be changed type of thing. But, you know, if you're going by the letter of the law, it probably so.
Yeah, and then I thought Mike Sharvedomps had his probably best game as a Gamecock in a lot of ways, and I think that he's starting to come into his own a little bit more. And for those, you know, starting the paint, a paint touch doesn't have to be a pass into the bigs, which, you know, I don't know how great South Carolina even is at that right now, because their bigs aren't, just we'll call it what it is, up to snuff with other bigs in the SEC, which is hurting them. But Mike can drive the lane, and he can get past people. He can get to the rim. He's shown that numerous times, and especially lately. I think he's coming on. But maybe that's that person instead of Michi who's facilitating the inside-out offense. Maybe get into the paint, kick out, make that extra pass. The extra pass is what sets up the three-pointer, honestly. So we'll see what happens. I think that if nothing else, I have more faith than I did, you know, going into the SEC. I think they played Vanderbilt pretty well, despite Vandy being down one of their best players. Same thing with LSU, down a player. But they're showing the symbolism of a team again. And for a long time, I feel like they had lost that, even in the non-con games after the Greenbrier, after Clemson, after Virginia Tech, all of that. So excited to see where this thing goes with them. Alex, I texted you this yesterday. They started around 80th at KenPom. They're now up to like 71, I think as high as 66, 67. So they have outperformed preseason expectations, despite what, you know, grumbly fans want to say on message boards and on Twitter. But they've improved so much that at one point this season, they had about 8 to 10 projected 10-point plus losses on KenPom, and now they're down to 4. And so what I texted you, Alex, I think it was this morning or yesterday, was if the three ball starts dropping a little bit more, then, you know, maybe you hit 2 or 3 more than your expected hit at this point, because that's what KenPom uses. They use your data from the season. If you're a bad three-point shooting team, you know, you can surprise KenPom if that shot starts to drop. I've left it thinking that the Gamecocks have one win in the SEC. Then they're going to have to get to a minimum of 8 to get into a postseason tournament. And 8 might actually get you in the NCAA tournament once all the dust settles and the quad two victories and losses stay quad two. You have no bad losses. Yeah, it depends on who they're against for sure. But I think if you're playing in the SEC, you're playing a top 40 Q1. And, you know, Q1s, they spend the same everywhere, Alex. And that's what the selection committee looks at a lot of times. I agree with you. They should look at who you beat, you know, a quad 1A versus a quad 1B. Yeah. Yeah. But sometimes we've seen it in college football. We still see it in college basketball. The selection committee gets lazy.
Yeah, you know, and looking back at South Carolina's non-conference, you would have liked to see them get two of the games probably that they didn't get. One at Greenbrier, then that Virginia Tech home game. You really needed that home game, because then I think we could have even – we could go more into this discussion of what they need to do. But it does feel like, you know, you saw some good things, but they're behind right now. There's a lot of catch up to do. I think they're really even getting to that discussion. And we've talked about it. The SEC is not as good as it was last year, top to bottom, just that was an unreal league that year, last year. But it's still a good league and still got a bunch of good teams where South Carolina starts getting hot, they can rack up some wins and then just see what they can do. But you know, there's still steps they've got to take. Like defensively, like yesterday going into that game, you were a little worried about it because Georgia was one of the top offensive teams in the country, scoring in the high 90s. And they kind of did what they needed to do from a defensive standpoint. And, you know, tempo and things like that kind of helped from that standpoint. But, you know, defensively, they did what they needed to do. And for, you know, probably 10 minutes or 20 minutes of that game, really the first half and a little bit of that second half, did what they needed to do offensively into that last back half hit.
Yeah, and I think – and I'm not making excuses for Lamont Paris, because I wouldn't make an excuse for any head coach that's getting paid millions of dollars to do what they're doing. But anytime you have 9-10 new faces on a team, I don't care if you're the best coach in the world, it's tried and true. You're not going to be very successful year in and year out, coach to coach. I can hand count maybe like 4 or 5 times it's kind of worked out. And when I say worked out, you know, sometimes it's transfers that are in the system the second year. Like when you think about Todd Golden in Florida winning a national championship. But it's hard to do. And I don't think that the team should be built that way. And that might be off-season conversation. I do agree with Aaron Lucas that this team is lacking a point guard. He mentioned Aaron Lucas, Trey Kelly, or I think Trey said it. I don't want to attribute that to Aaron. Trey put it out there on social media that Gamecocks have only had 2 guys that average four more assists per game over the last like 20 years. And there's only been 1 that's averaged over 5. And outside of those 3 guys I just mentioned, Aaron Lucas, Trey Kelly, and I think it was it Devin?
Yeah, Devin.
Yeah. The last person to do it before was Talon Cooper.
Right.
So, and when we talked about that, I said it over and over, Talon was the straw that stirred that entire drink. So they got to figure it out. And maybe Mike can be that attacking guy. The game guys are going to have to continue to draw fouls because while three counts more than two, if you're cold from three, you got to get your points from the foul line. You're a pretty decent foul shooting team most of the time, but statistically, you're one of the best in the country. So, Alex, I think it probably, you know, just talking about the men's team real quick, they do play, who is it, Arkansas Wednesday night. They're a 10-point underdog, and then Saturday they'll play at Auburn. So two road games back-to-back, 10- and 9-point underdogs, but maybe you hit some threes, you can figure it out. But it's definitely gut check time because 1-4 in the SEC, just call it a season, man. I'm serious. Like, you're not going to be able to get out of that bubble or get out of that – not bubble – you're not going to be able to get onto the bubble if you dig yourself that big of a hole. So, Alex, let's go ahead and hit let's do about 20 minutes now on the transfer portal. I'll walk you through some of this, Alex, and we can go – if you want to go by position, if you want to go player by player. What I have right now is just the 24/7 commitment list. If you want me to go player by player, we can do that. And you can tell us what the Gamecocks are getting.
Yeah, let's just do that. Let's go player by player.
All right, so the Gamecocks have 15 players committed, well, I guess 16 now, with the running back that just
it's 17 with the long snapper because the long snapper's not on the list.
Okay, so 17 incoming transfers. They lost 20 something, I think it was the number, Alex, 21. So yeah, you're kind of tit for tat right now, and the Gamecocks are still going to be active. But let's start with Kelby Collins. He is a defensive lineman. He's coming from Alabama. Started his career at Florida. He was a 4-star guy. The Gamecock fans might remember him. What are the coaches hoping they're getting with him, and how did that kind of recruitment go down?
Yeah, it's interesting. If you follow, you know, South Carolina recruiting, this is a name you're going to remember because coming out of high school when he was in, I think it was Gardendale, Alabama, in that class, like South Carolina was involved in that recruitment. Was one of the got one of three official visits with him. You know, Kelby ends up going to Florida, spends a few years there. South Carolina, he gets in the transfer portal. South Carolina gets involved with him in the transfer portal. Then he goes to Alabama this year, and now he's going to use his last year at South Carolina along with his twin brother Drew Collins, who's an edge. You know, I think he's one where, you know, that interior D tackle room was one that South Carolina had to really kind of fill. And talk about both lines of scrimmages, and he's one that, you know, I think could probably do a little bit of both from an interior and an edge standpoint. So I think it's going to kind of be one of those types of things. But a guy that's going to bring experience, SEC experience to that room, which is a room that's starting to be a little intriguing too with what they've added in the transfer portal, plus what's coming back with Troy Pikes and guys like that. So really intriguing pickup that I think, you know, has had some production in his career. That a guy that, you know, see if you can get him under Travion Robinson and those guys there, see if you can have that one last good year.
I think so too. Quasheed Scott, DB, probably going to play nickel, can play outside. Another guy you should remember, 2 years ago, the Gamecocks tried to flip him from Kentucky.
Yeah.
In-state kid. Alex, with him, the thing I like about him is he has 2 years of SEC experience, but a lot of snaps this past year. Right. He knows what what the SEC is. It's a grind. He knows what he's getting into, and he's home. And he's got some relations to some other Gamecocks I know you've talked about. But, you know, just getting him and solidifying, you know, the loss of Brandon Cisse and Jalen Kilgore.
Yeah, interesting to see where he ends up. I see it being nickel just because that's where he played really this past year at nickel for Kentucky. And guy that was really productive at Kentucky, had played really well. And, you know, Mark Stoops is one that, you know, when he's really good, you know, secondary is kind of his thing, defense. And he knows what he's looking for in cornerbacks and nickels and every member of the secondary because they've had some really good ones come through Kentucky. And, you know, they really, you know, had to fight off South Carolina to get him and really, really wanted Quasheed Scott. So, guy is going to bring some size to that nickel spot that I see him taking over for Jalen Kilgore. But, you know, I thought that was, you know, one of the better pickups South Carolina's had. That, you know, as soon as you saw his name get into the portal, you knew South Carolina had to get involved there because guy that can come back home. You've seen some of these types of move works out for South Carolina. So I think he kind of fits right in with what Torian Gray likes at that spot.
I think so too. I do like the pickup a lot. And like I said this years ago, Alex, and I don't know if I've said it as much lately because recruiting's been kind of crazy as is, but just I tell people don't trash kids and they don't go to your school because in this era of football, you're probably going to see them again and maybe even on your roster, or maybe you want them on your roster. But Jakarius Peak might be the headliner of the entire class, Alex. Yeah. You know, a player that played at NC State, pretty much starting since his redshirt freshman season. I know he started the last six games of the season. I think they were all wins for NC State, or 5-1, 4-2, something like that. But I think it was all wins. And he had 8 pancakes as a true freshman just in those six games. So I'm excited about him. He was a kid the Gamecocks beat Alabama for, it sounds like. And for some reason, just like South Carolina more. That's a good thing. But just talk about Jakarius Peak and what he can mean, which I think is big.
Yeah, he's going to end up probably being one of the biggest pickups for Southcon just because of the need that was at for tackles really in this class. Not only just tackles, but offensive line. And a guy that's highly ranked really by both big recruiting services. And I just think he's one that kind of at that size, you're seeing some of the size things stand out with these offensive linemen that are coming in. Like, he's a guy that, you know, has an experience too. We're going to talk about this with pretty much every guy, it seems like, but they all bring in, you know, either SEC experience or Power Four level experience, most of them. And just a guy that, you know, I think they're trying to get older on that offensive line, but a guy that's going to probably, you'll see, you know, I'm interested to see kind of when you see these early draft boards come out for the, I guess, what would that be, the 27 draft. You know, if he's going to be a guy that's on that list, because he was highly sought after. You mentioned Alabama on his list, and he, you know, South kind of had to help kind of hold off Alabama there, I guess. But it, you know, really going to end up being a really big pickup. And if, you know, you don't want to make too early depth charts, but I think you can slot him into a tackle spot there.
Yeah, I think that's that. You might, I hate to say right in pen or Sharpie right now, but that's pretty close any other position on the team. All right, so this is where the fun starts, and Alex is going to love this. Defensive lineman from Illinois to South Carolina, Tamiwa Dorojai, I think.
I think you're pretty close, yeah.
All right, just another guy that's big. Fits the mold that Travian's looking for. And there's a number of those. The next guy, Jordan Thomas, maybe we can hit both these guys together because they're both defensive tackles. But, I mean, like you said, power four experience for both these guys. Jordan Thomas been to Georgia. Maybe he gives a little secret to the Gamecocks there on the schedule next year. But yeah, we'll see. What are your thoughts on those two?
Yeah, both guys, again, kind of what we talked about with Kelby Collins, you know, had some interest in high school between Southcon and for Jordan Thomas, really, especially. And then Tamiwa Dorojai, there was some interest there too. But really interested with Dorojai, he was one that I think it was either yesterday or the day before got a ranking by 24/7. He's a top 50 overall player in the country. I think number 5 defensive lineman. But a guy that, you know, has been to a few stops in his career coming to Southcon, but been a productive bit. I think he grades out pretty well PFF. And with Jordan Thomas, you kind of see the potential there. Like, Georgia knows what they're looking for in defensive lineman, Kirby Smart and those guys. And, you know, I think he's one that, you know, has kind of the familiarity with South Carolina. So that's what I mentioned with this D-line haul. It's really interesting what they're doing with bringing in these guys along with Troy Pikes, who you saw coming on really towards the end of the year, and some of these other guys are returning. So it's going to be a really intriguing group to watch kind of spring ball arrives.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you know, Hale put something out, they're probably done at defensive tackle unless there's just a stud that wants to come. But you've got those numbers looking pretty good right now, especially with the two incoming freshmen. And I love their size, but Jordan Thomas, I think he's got all the potential in the world. And it might be like a Gabriel Brownlow Dindy type situation, just maybe a year earlier, maybe a year or two earlier. But I'm excited to see what he can do. You already mentioned Drew Collins with Kelby. And then this is a guy, wide receiver. I think a lot of Gamecocks were looking for, you know, maybe a number one wide receiver. I don't know if he is, but I know you're excited about Nitro Tuggle, Alex.
Yeah, I think he's a nice fit for what Kendall Bras is going to do in this system with what we talked about from a spread it out type of standpoint. And he was at Purdue, had a really productive year on a team that was just, it wasn't a great Purdue team, but a guy that had around 500 yards receiving. And I thought the thing that kind of stood out when he looked at Nitro Tuggle was he had really good games against really good teams. I don't have the exact numbers up right now, but he had a really good game against Indiana. I think his season high was against Indiana. In the last game of the season, you saw him do really well against Notre Dame, who had a good secondary this year. You saw him do really well against Southern Cal, who's typically got a really talented team. So he did, he kind of shined in the best game. So I think that's something that was, you know, a big win for South Carolina. He ended up going to Vandy for a visit, but South Carolina held off Vandy. And I just think, you know, the Lawrence Sellers obviously had his eye on Nitro Tuggle pretty early on, and you know, they're able to close the deal. And I just think he's going to end up being a really nice fit for that Kendall Browse offense.
Yeah, I went back and tried to find as much film as I could on Nitro and saw some. But one thing that I do recall was he had a spring game highlight on there, and the announcers were talking like, and Nitro Tuggle catches a 15-yard curl route, whatever. But they gushed about him. They said that the Georgia coaches felt like he could be next at wide receiver. He catches the ball with his hands. He's pretty athletic as well. But, like, I mean, it sounds stupid, catching the ball with your hands. But, like, sometimes you can just snatch a ball out of the air, like Larry Fitzgerald. And I'm not comparing Nitro Tuggle to Larry Fitzgerald, but that's what the hands look like on a couple of those plays. And then he even had some plays as a freshman for Georgia as well. A lot of offensive linemen here, Alex, we probably need to get to. You got Seth Smith, and he's coming from, Northern Arizona? Yeah. And then you have Dane Arnett coming from Ferris State. I like both these guys at tackle, man. I think maybe you could even slide them inside if you needed to. But, man, from a size standpoint, it looks just like what Clem is looking for at offensive line.
That's exactly what I was going to say. When, you know, obviously South Carolina not only needs starters, but also needs depth on the offensive line. So, and they're just going to bring in guys that's going to kind of build that competition. But both of those guys, as you mentioned, kind of fit the mold of what they're looking for from a size standpoint. The offensive line is going to have to, with the tempo and, you know, how quick they want to run some of these offensive plays, the offensive line is going to have to be able to get down the field and move. And you're seeing that with some of these guys on the offensive line. And you know, I think that those two are really going to be intriguing guys too.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm laughing in the chat box here. X, he catches the ball with his hands, very legit. And then SEC guy, he runs with his feet. And then XO says quality wide receiver things. Absolutely. Yep. If you can't catch the ball and run with your feet, you ain't playing wide receiver for me, son. But I just want to say sometimes it just looks different. If you've ever watched, I said Larry Fitzgerald, but like Puka does the same thing. Like really good wide receivers look different. AJ Green.
It's an explosiveness kind of about them. Yeah. That first step is really quick.
MD try. Yeah, he does. He watches the ball with his eyes too, which it'd be cool if he had like sonar, like a bat, and then he could just like grab it out of the air. Tet McMillan has suction hands. Suction hands is a good way to say it. I like that. That's what I'm trying to say. But yeah, you know, the Dane Arnett kid from Ferris State, back-to-back national champion defensive end. I've talked to enough people that really like him. We'll see. Like, remember, the Gamecocks still have talent on the roster. Not everybody was ready to play next year or last year necessarily. And, you know, they cycled out a lot of people they wanted to cycle out. Emmanuel Poku, another interior offensive lineman, Hank Purvis, Carter Miller, all these guys, you know, Carter Miller was at UCF, Hank Purvis, Purdue, and then Emmanuel Poku at East Carolina. It really does seem like, Alex, they've, I can't say upgraded yet, but if you were to go name for name, where'd you play before, what'd you do before, and you knew you were bringing that all together with a new offensive coordinator and offensive line coach, I couldn't be more happy with what South Carolina's done on the offensive line.
Yeah, Poku is a really, you know, it was a little bit under the radar when he committed. It came out of nowhere a little bit, but, you know, he's one that, you know, he's going to bring a little bit of versatility to that offensive line. At East Carolina, he played both guard and tackle. But was really, this past season was an all-conference second team, I think, performer in the American Conference for what he did at guard. And, you know, that in 2024, he kind of split between right guard and right tackle. But this year, he was at guard. And I can see it. I think he's going to probably start at tackle when he gets to South Carolina. But, you know, let's just, you know, kind of look forward to the future and say that if your tackles are Poku and Jakarius Pete, like that's, you know, a really nice start for what you can do on the outside, because those guys have been proven and they're going to be, you know, highly ranked guys coming out of the transfer portal. But you have to like the size of both of those guys bring, because kind of what we talked about is right what Clem is looking for.
I think so too. And you mentioned that Jabari Coleman from Penn State. You know, there's some clips that Stan Drayton was describing his running back room in the offseason, the preseason, and talked glowingly of the kid. Now, how much of that's coach speak, how much of it's not? I watched his highlights. I think he has really good highlights.
That's what I was about to say. His high school highlights are really good. Like, that's you see kind of see what Stan Drayton's talking about there.
Yeah, and you see him catch the ball in the backfield a lot too, which is a really good thing. But I mean, I don't know much about these running backs. I mean, honestly, they haven't played that much. I mean, it's hard to even talk about Sam Dixon, who came from Ohio State. He was an athlete in high school, plays running back. Look, these two kids, no one broke the bank for. And I mean, that's a good thing, I think, you know, at, you know, at this point in the transfer portal. But to get kids from two quality programs like that, when you're talking about Ohio State and Penn State, they were good enough to be on that roster. And you see what you have. I don't think either of these kids will be counted on this year, but who knows? We've seen Gamecock running backs go from third, fourth on the depth chart all the way up to the starter for different reasons and perform well. But looking at the rest of them, Alex, I think it's just Upton Belafonte, Uptown. But anyway, Upton Belafonte, he's a kid that Pete Limbo identified in high school, played for Pete Limbo, seems to be pretty good from, you know, 49 and in. Don't know if he's really been challenged that often or enough to know on 50 plus. But I think anytime there's competition in a room, that's a good thing.
Yeah, exactly. And this guy that you kind of mentioned played for Pete Limbo. Obviously, Pete Limbo knows what to look for from a place kicker. And God, I was really good at Buffalo from a numbers standpoint. God has hit some 50-plus yarders too. So you mentioned competition, but, you know, we'll see, you know, with him and Max Kelly, both those guys have pretty big legs. So that should be a pretty fun competition to track.
I think so too. And then the long snapper, Alex, remind me of his name.
Emmett Rhodes.
Yeah, Emmett Rhodes. I mean, I think this kind of goes hand in hand with SC Scout Guy asking, so how many slots do the Gamecocks have left? I think it's as many players that want to come. You can go up to 105. I don't think they necessarily want to do that for a number of reasons, but they're not going to. The 105, if South Carolina can find 105 scholarship football players that are good enough to be on scholarship, South Carolina will take them, and they will make it work in the other sports. But, yeah, another long snapper. There's going to be competition there. I think that's good. But, Alex, I mean, I think that they'll still take about any position right now.
Yeah, the spots I'm kind of keeping an eye on are, you know, do they add another edge, tight end. Now with Pittman going to SMU, then you saw Josh Sapp, the Clemson transfer, commit to West Virginia. Like, tight end's going to be a spot to continue watching here into this next week. And secondary, do they add anybody else there from either a safety or a cornerback standpoint? Think linebacker, you're good there. You got all three of your guys back. You still got some depth from a freshman standpoint. Both lines of scrimmage, like, I think it's one of those where, you know, what kind of irons in the fire do they have there? Do they have some guys that just make sense to bring in? Because you still want to build depth, especially from an offensive line standpoint, just from a numbers standpoint with how much they lost. So continue tracking that. Running back, now you're at with Coleman, that's five scholarship backs that you have. So that's kind of the ideal number that you want. I think the spots you feel like they're done are wide receiver. Obviously, you got the JUCO quarterback that you got coming in for a visit. Yeah. That's from South Point. Wide receiver, I feel like you're probably done unless it's just one of those where it's just a right fit type of thing. Linebacker, maybe in the secondary, and it's just one of those right fit types of things there. But really, you know, edge, you'll see if they add anybody else there. That's going to be, you know, intriguing to watch. And then tight end's just a spot that's really got my eye.
To give you a number on it, I would say that I can see 6 to 8 more players being added. I don't know if I go all the way to 10, but it wouldn't surprise me. Don't think it's probably 2/3 of the way done right now is the best way I'd explain it. And there's probably still going to be kids that enter the portal. You could see some guys coming from, I don't know if Oregon would actually be a team, but Ole Miss, all that, and then the national championship game. And don't get it twisted. Indiana's already processing kids out too. I don't know if you want them or not, but there are going to be more transfers, and there's 5 more days.
Yeah, and Queen of the Cox brought up tight end and safety is big for me, as he said. And safety is interesting just because obviously they haven't added anybody from a transfer portal perspective at safety. But, you know, you got Jazavian Currents. Like, could that be a guy that comes in and is a day one impact type of guy? Like, I could see it with what he did at South Point. He mentioned Kendall Daniels too. Like, that's a guy that, you know, just from a size standpoint, really stands out. He'll be in year two in the program. He had enough trust from the coaching staff that he got used a little bit in that dime package late in the season. So safety is going to be interesting to watch, see in this next week here, if they find somebody that fits or if they just kind of roll with what they got there with Peyton Williams, Gerald Kilgore, and other guys.
Oh, I agree. I think that they're going to have to get a tight end. They're going to have to get a safety. I just don't know who it'll be yet. And it might be – look, I know that, you know, we'll talk quickly about Chaz Coleman. with Chaz Coleman. I mean, he got up to $2 million, and it's not the Gamecocks couldn't pay $2 million. It's why are you paying $2 million is the better question. And sometimes I think the teams can make that work. Some other teams can't, but, you know, you can't make somebody the second or third highest paid player on your team and hope to have a locker room is what I'll say on that. But just quickly, we're going to hit a break here in a second. But for those wondering, Jaylen Brown, he has gone to LSU. Josiah Thompson, the portal, hasn't committed anywhere. Dre Jacobs to Miami. Boaz Stanley to Purdue. Looking through here. Big Tree, Nebraska, you probably already knew. Kasen Henry to Louisville. Aaron Nolan, nowhere yet. Trevon Ball to A&M. Brian Rowe all the way out to UCLA. And then Jerron Willis to Kansas. Xavier Hardy actually came into South Florida, then switched it to Baylor.
Yeah.
So that was interesting. And then Nick Sharp, Michigan State. And then Michael Smith, one of the hotter names to start this transfer portal, ended up at Syracuse. So take what you will from all of that. But, Alex, let's go ahead and get to our sponsor break, and then we'll have Justin come in for Rambling and Gambling.
Morning, Carl. Usual?
Yeah.
Your oldest was in here the other day. Said the two of you took a trip down to my neck of the woods. How'd that go?
You might as well give me one of those Carolina cars while you're at it.
I knew I liked that one.
Yeah.
There you go, my friend.
Thanks.
Hey, Carl. Congratulations.
See you tomorrow, ready?
You bet.
J.C. Sherbert here. Had a brilliant idea that some good friends of mine in Florence have told me about. Next time you're having a wedding or an event or anytime you got to feed a bunch of people, talk to my friends over at Flavortown Eats and Events. That's right. It's a food truck slash trailer. Prepares the food fresh on site right there for you. No hassle. It's absolutely delicious. They'll come out, turnkey solution to feed the masses at your event. Go to their website right now. FlavortownFlow.com. That's FlavortownFlow.com. They have all the contact information you need, and they are a proud sponsor of the Late Night Gamecock Show and the Chief Sports Network.
Welcome to Palm Casual Patio Furniture. Because we are the factory, Palm Casual has the ability to offer the highest quality outdoor furniture paired with world-class service. Since 1979, our factory showrooms have done our best to make the buying process as easy as possible for our customers. Our understanding of the many factors that go into your decision has helped us create our 30-day trial period that increases the level of comfort our customers feel during the shopping experience. Visit us in Somerville, Mount Pleasant, Myrtle Beach, and Bluffton and online at palmcasual.com for our products and out-of-state locations. Go Gamecocks!
This is the Late Night Gamecock Show with the pride of Hampton County, Alex Jones. And with the king of late night, Matt Anderson. Go Gamecocks!
Welcome back in to the Late Night Gamecock Show. It is now time for Rambling and Gambling with Justin Lyles of SportsCapValue.com. Justin, man, happy to have you in here. How was your college football playoff Final Four?
It's going pretty good. Started off slowly, but here we are with Indiana and Miami. I know we talked about Miami several weeks back, Matt. They're going pretty well. And then obviously, I was on Georgia against Ole Miss. That didn't turn out too well. I spoke about them, and the same with Ole Miss. So, both had good runs, but Indiana just whooped the you-know-what out of Oregon. And here we are. They're laying seven and a half in Miami, which is going to be a home game for Miami. So, a lot to kind of be thinking about as I decipher these numbers going in for probably, what, a week or so, 10 days, give or take. From today for the national championship.
I got a feeling it being a home game for Miami is exactly what Kurt Cignetti wants. It just feels like he's going to just feed off of that.
Yes, I would not be surprised if NFL just comes in and starts. I mean, getting him and Mendoza as a kind of package deal. Yep. I mean, who wouldn't sign up for that? Obviously, watching Mendoza just throw darts and make throws just consistently. I mean, it's hard for me not to understand how he couldn't be the number one pick or the lock for the number one pick. And then Indiana, what Cignetti's doing, just getting these guys motivated, not making mistakes, and just dominate and run the ball. Watch that point spread, 7.5. It may go up as we make our way closer to January 19th.
Well, I can tell you this. NFL better pay up if they want him, because I don't know if you've heard of this, Justin, but his clause in his contract. Yeah. If he just makes the national championship game at Indiana, he has to have a $100,000 higher salary than every other publicly salaried coach in the country.
Yeah, well, these NFL billionaires, they're not worried about 50, 80 million, whatever the buyout is. I mean, they're willing to roll the – when they're collecting $400 and $500 million annual checks, bringing in, I don't think they're worried about it.
Yeah, and that's the thing I texted Alex. I was like, you know, he's very Saban-like in a lot of his mannerisms, the way he coaches, the way I feel like his team respects him, most importantly. But he is 64, so – I mean, he has to ask himself, too, how long do I want to be in this transfer portal game? If the NFL is going to come put me $80 million in my pocket on a six-year contract, maybe, you know, something like that. I mean, that's still crazy money, but you never know.
If he wins the whole thing, I mean, is he going to quickly rise to one of the greatest coaches of all time, the turnaround he's done from one of the worst programs ever?
I mean, it's as you mentioned, Indiana didn't have much of anything from a football tradition standpoint. And, like, last year they're really good, but this year they just take it to another level. Like, they're just almost unstoppable offensively. And then defensively, they're more than solid enough there. But, I mean, that watching that game the other night, like, they couldn't be stopped.
That's right.
Yeah, it's funny, man. You know, just talking about Indiana, I promise you there will be a lot of Indiana fans in Miami, because – they don't have a lot to celebrate in hoops, and then there's some money in Indiana, and there are going to be some people going for a nice, nice long week-long vacation down in Fort Lauderdale, Miami area. Yeah, to your point though, Justin, I'm surprised it's not a double-digit spread just based on what I've seen from the two teams. Miami has impressed me a lot in the college football playoffs. Maybe not so much against A&M. But in the other games, I've been very, very impressed. But I just don't think Indiana can be stopped. And they might be one of the best teams of all time when it's all said and done.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. This is their year, and right now it's come out at 7.5. So, I mean, if you're looking to bet this game, keep an eye on it. If it continues to rise, you want to go ahead and lock it in. So,
absolutely. And then I know that you love the NFL, Justin. It's one of your favorite sports to handicap. Could you have asked for a better first couple of games in the NFL playoffs than we've gotten?
No. It looks like San Francisco just upset the Eagles as we're kind of on here right now. So, of the four games that have been played so far, every underdog's covered, and I believe every over has hit. So, keep an eye on the game tonight and then the one tomorrow. And see, I don't expect every underdog to cover for all six games, but I could be wrong. Obviously, with the pass tonight, I look for them and then the under in that game. But the playoffs, yeah, it's what the NFL is, and that's why they're the biggest thing going as far as entertainment-wise.
Well, I can tell you what, nobody was happier in the world than Roger Goodell with the end of that Rams-Panthers game, leading 10 minutes into the Packers-Bills just to keep that audience. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, last night hurt for me. I was on the Packers, and – kind of dozed off right before halftime and then woke up and they were down, Bears were down 11. And I kind of felt like something was up, and sure enough, Packers forgot how to tackle.
Yeah. I stayed up for that, the entirety of that game. And I couldn't go to sleep after it. It was just crazy. Partly because I knew my buddy JC and Alex's friend JC was out there just having the time of his life in Chicagoland at the Bears bar. But I mean, tomorrow night, you got Texans Steelers. I mean, the way I'm looking at it right now, it says Texans minus -3 in Pittsburgh. Oh, man. Something about Pittsburgh at night in the playoffs on Monday night, that kind of scares me, a team coming a little bit across the country. But over under of 38.5, which is a pretty low number, but we know the Texans are one of the best defenses in the NFL. How are you feeling on that one? I know you mentioned Chargers, Patriots already.
Yes. I love the Texans. I spoke about it last week on the show. Like, I like what they're doing. They're coming in as hot as anybody. Their defense is arguably the best in the NFL. I just wonder if Aaron Rodgers can make it through this game, if Will Anderson and the crew are kind of getting after him. So I expect it to be a low scoring, but I think Stroud's going to be the difference in this one. And I think I like the Texans to move on. And my sleeper to win the AFC, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, they're hot getting into this playoffs. So, I mean, I think they won 8 straight, 9 straight, something like that. So, I mean, they're playing, kind of playing with fire right now. So, they're going to be fun to watch.
So, Justin, did you put out a pick on the South Carolina-Georgia basketball game or the LSU-South Carolina game this past week?
Yeah, I was on the over for the LSU-South Carolina. Fortunately, I hit by half a point. They were cruising, crushing it in the first half. Obviously, South Carolina came, you know, they couldn't miss and kind of let LSU come back in, kind of slow down in the second half. And fortunately, I was on the right side with the over. And then I was on the under in the Georgia on the game yesterday, and they crushed that one pretty easily. Obviously, South Carolina, if you were following the spread, that was one of the bad beats of yesterday nationally, with Shy missing that little layup at the end as time expired. For those who follow closely, that was a 4.5 spread, and they lost by 5. So,
oh, wow. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, no. I noticed they didn't beat the spread. They beat the spread against Vandy, I believe. And I believe that, well, they definitely beat the spread against LSU because they won outright. Justin, right. You know, going forward, anything optimism for the Gamecocks? I think that the if you want to, I'm basically talking about a betting angle here as well. But, you know, if the one thing happens is all the models right now have the Gamecocks sucking as a 3-point shooting team. So if they can start banging in maybe 2 or 3 more, I can see the Gamecocks covering some spreads here if they're underdogs, which I expect them to be.
Yeah, I mean, they got, what, Arkansas and Auburn, I believe, this week. Yeah. So, on the road, they're probably going to be around double digit, around 10, give or take, for each one. So, I expect, you know, you get a hot shooting night, they could cover easily. Like I said last week, when you get into that 10 to 15, even in the high teens, getting points in college basketball – that's where I like to feast, as I like to say. I think that's where, you know, you get the free throws, you get guys throwing up stuff, and maybe the better team is pool stars and whatnot, allows teams to come back in. But sometimes a lot of the visiting squads are really have nothing to lose, so they're kind of firing away and seem a little bit motivated when going against someone else's home crowd.
Yeah, I think so too. That definitely, I mean, it used to motivate me. I remember being in Hartsville's gym with people right on top of me, and I loved hitting a three when I could feel someone's breath on the back of my neck. That was awesome, man.
Oh, yeah.
But you know, one of the questions I do have for you, Justin, this actually came up on the show on Friday, and JC asked me to ask you on the air. He's heard from a handicapping standpoint that home underdogs are one of the best bets you can make in college basketball. I don't know if you've ever studied that trend, noticed it, but home underdogs seem to be a good bet.
Yeah, I mean, I think more so in college than in the pros, whether it be basketball or football, is that home crowd difference, especially in basketball, because the crowd is just – you're dealing with around 10, 15,000 folks for most arenas. And like you said prior, like a lot of them are on top of you, so to speak. So it is a big chance to pull an upset, so to speak, if you are a home underdog. But it also depends too. You kind of look at trends too, how a team's playing. Have they come off a bad loss? You know, maybe they're a little more focused, or are they kind of hitting a winning streak and maybe not as focused because they're feeling good coming into the game. So there's a lot of factors that come into that, but in college basketball, yeah, I would agree with JC that there is a little bit of extra there being that home dog.
You know, that something he just said was really interesting to me, Alex. It was after a loss, refocusing and coming back playing to win. That's definitely not how fans watch games. If you lost the game, you're losing every game the rest of the year. Yeah. There's no refocusing that's going to happen. But I do think that's interesting because I've seen this happen time and time and again when a team maybe loses a game they're not supposed to in college basketball. And then the next game is against a top 25 team or a top 15 team at home. And that team coming off a loss at home and they whip them. I mean, they honestly do. It's almost just like, this is our turf. And that's why it's important for Gamecock fans to get out there to watch the Gamecocks. I've been to the last two home games, and after 12 minutes, they say, fans in the upper deck can now go to the lower deck. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you this, Alex, you weren't at the game. You were covering the portal. The Georgia fans in attendance for that South Carolina-Georgia game made a difference because they were all in the lower deck, and I'd say they probably had 20% of the crowd, and it kind of made it interesting. But, yeah, I'm going to start tracking that, the home underdogs, and see what happens. But, Justin, before we get out of here tonight, it's just so I hear you correctly, it sounds like you're probably leaning Texans, minus covering the three. If you can get Indiana minus 7.5, is that a bet you think you would place right now?
Yeah, I would ride with Indiana. I don't see them losing to Miami in this fashion.
Yeah, I think I'm right there with you. So really quick, Alex, you know, you've watched all this college football playoff. What does Miami have to do to win that game?
It feels like they're going to have to play keep up because it feels like Indiana's offense is just humming along. And that's why I just don't know if Miami's offense is going to be able to play keep up in this game. Now, it will be interesting to watch Miami's defense go up against Indiana's offense. I know that front seven for Miami is really good, so kind of watch that. But just feels like, you know, they're going to have to play keep up in that game. And I don't know. That's why I'd lean towards the covering there as well.
Yeah, and we still got more time to talk about it. We'll talk about it next week too. But go ahead, Justin.
I was just going to add, I think it depends if can they get to Mendoza and kind of fluster him. Mm-hmm. I know Mendoza likes to take off and run from time to time. We'll see if that is a factor. And then can the Indiana front get to Carson Beck and kind of disrupt his kind of play because he's had a really good run here lately. You got to give him credit. So I think that's going to be the difference. Whose defense affects the quarterback the most?
I had Ole Miss covering the spread against Miami just because I thought Carson Beck would – you know, turn back into a puddle of water at some point. But that has not happened, and he's been really, really impressive. So, you know, negative 10 points to Matt for doubting him. But I think he might have made some money in the NFL too. I don't think he was going to be a drafted guy. I think he might be drafted now.
Yeah, somebody's going to get him.
It's not a great quarterback class this year, so that probably helped a little bit too.
I agree. Well, Justin, Alex, we gotta cut out on that note. SEC Sunday Night guys are about to come on the Chief Sports Network right now, so make sure you check them out. Alex and Justin, we'll start with Justin. Any parting shots, words of wisdom, or words of encouragement in 2026?
Pay attention. Like I always say, when you can get the points, take them. You're feeling one way or another when it comes to taking games, and we'll see what the Gamecocks do going forward. They got two road games, so this could be a big week for the rest of their season and how that goes. So,
Where can the folks find you?
SportsCatValue.com. If you want the 3-day free play, the discount code is Gamecock, all capital letters, and you'll get 3 free days, and you can follow our plays. No better time to do it right now with the playoffs and all the other sports going on.
Oh, my gosh. That's where you can win big money. Alex, any parting shots from you from Portal Land? Where you
been? I was about to say one more week of the portal. We got even less than a week of the portal left, at least of the portal being open. So one more week. That's all I got to say.
Well, we'll analyze this entire portal class next week. Everything should be done for the most part, even though there's kids still there. You'll probably get a kid in the spring, get a kid in the summer who would just stay in the portal and didn't commit, and it fits for South Carolina. But, hey, y'all, baseball season is about a month away now, so we're going to start getting some college baseball information in here. Whittle has graciously agreed to come on the show one night coming up. And, Justin, I know you're a big baseball guy. We might have you on for the entire show so you can get your questions in too. But Whittle just want to get through a couple scrimmages, maybe make it as close to the opening day as possible. But I'm fired up, y'all. I love when, you know, two sports are going at the same time, men's and women's. So we'll have the women's to watch, and then we'll have softball and baseball to watch if the boys don't pick it up in basketball. Well, y'all, we appreciate you. Thank you so much for being here with me tonight, and we appreciate everyone in the chat box. You know, keep them coming. We love spending our time with you. And we'll talk to you soon. Coffee will be with JC tomorrow. SEC Sunday night starts right now.